Welcome back to NALP's Young Professionals Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your host of today's podcast is myself, Skylar Westergaard. Brett is out for the week. He's traveling and wasn't able to make today's call, but I'm excited to welcome our guest, Keenan Baird. How you doing, Keenan? It's good to have you here.
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me, Skylar.
Yeah, we're glad you made the time, and I am excited about our conversation that we're going to get into today. Let me introduce you to our audience, and then let's start chatting about some fun stuff. Keenan embarked on his green industry journey about when he was about 15 years old, working for his brother-in-law's tree care company. This early experience ignited Keenan's passion for the outdoors and set him on his current path. He graduated from Brigham Young University, Idaho, with a bachelor's degree in business management, and he minored in horticulture. Keenan's talents shone brightly at the National Collegiate Landscape Competition, where he earned first place in arboriculture skills. In pursuit of new opportunities, Keenan ventured to Nashville, Tennessee, where he joined Melosi. Starting as a junior landscape designer, Keenan quickly made his mark, and today Keenan serves as the plant, healthcare, and fine gardening manager, overseeing critical aspects of the company's operations. And I know that you've done a lot more than that, and there's a lot of things that you're into, so we're going to get into that. I have to say, I'm excited about having Keenan on the podcast, because when he was at Brigham Young University, Idaho, he was one of my students in his horticulture minor program. So, Keenan, it's glad to have you here. Did I miss anything?
No, I'm excited to be here. And like you said, we've got some good rapport built up. Really respected you as a professor, and I'm glad we have this professional relationship as well.
Great. So I gotta share, you know, with the audience, one of the funnest memories that I have is as a professor, I would often get calls or emails from people that were looking for students to do some work for them, you know, on the side. They wanted to support students that were trying to gain experience in landscaping. They wanted to provide some opportunities for students to earn some money. And, you know, when those requests would come in, I would try to like figure out like who would be a good student to do this. Do I have some students that have the capacity for it? And it was often design work, which I always had a handful of students that were capable of doing that. And this request came in one time that was so unique. I'm like, there's only one person I can think of that I think could even tackle a project like this. And it was like a big cleanup project that actually required like some equipment, some heavy equipment, mm-hmm. you know, and something that you wouldn't necessarily hire college students to do. And it was Keenan that I knew could tackle that project. Keenan, why don't you do you remember that one? Do you want to share a little bit about it?
Yeah, I remember that project really well. And actually I bit off more than I can chew when I took it on. It was clearing 5 acres of brush and woodland of invasive species, planting some native meadow grass, and then kind of creating some park trails. It took me 2 months, and honestly, I'd estimated it for 2 weeks worth. And we had a backhoe out there for almost half of that time. And I learned a lot about working with customers, estimating jobs, and how important it is to clarify your scope of work from the get-go, because there's a lot of scope creep.
Yeah, good. You know, I want to be careful here too, but that is often the case too, when it's like somebody was... This is the other part of people asking students to do work, is they're sometimes looking for something less expensive and they don't really know what mm-hmm. it's going to take. Now, you said we in that, because if I'm not mistaken, you actually hired some other people to help you, right?
Yeah, I did. One of the agriculture students who I'm really good friends came out and he helped me on that job, and we worked together well. And so, yeah, there was the two of us out there.
Yeah, I love, I always appreciate that story, because I think if I remember right, when I reached out to you, I was like, this is what it is. Like, you don't have to say yes. I'm just telling you of the opportunity. But it also goes to show a little bit, Keenan, about your ability to tackle things that maybe are intimidating or that you're not quite sure about. And I appreciate that you shared, this is what I learned. I did bite off more than I can chew, but I learned a lot from that. So if anything else, maybe it wasn't a huge moneymaker, but you learned some skills that are applying to what you do now.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, you know, I'm a jump 2 feet into the pool kind of guy, no toe dipping. You know, before the show, we talked a little bit last year. I saw, while I was in school, I saw a need for, you know, an irrigation specific auditing app or software. And I got with some software developers based out of Utah, and we built an application. And I learned so much in that experience too. Unfortunately, we realized that our product wasn't going to serve the market as well as we hoped it would, and we shut our doors. But that was a big growth opportunity for me last year.
Yeah. So writing an app, seeing a need and saying, wow, I could write an app for that, you know, kind of thing. And also, I see a correlation between this irrigation auditing software and this project that you took on as a college student, is that you're not afraid to reach out to others that can help you kind of achieve that, whether that be hiring a friend of yours to help with run the backhoe or hiring a software company to help write code or whatever it is. So,
yeah, absolutely. One of the things that the owner of Melosi had shared with me is, you know, never let money get in the way of pursuing your dreams. And a lot of times you have to partner with others in order to make that a reality, right? And so something else I learned in that opportunity of you know, developing an application and a software to go with it was I developed a respect for the softwares we deal with in the landscape industry, because there's so much on the back end you never see as an end user. And I have a lot of respect for the products we use now.
Oh, great point. I use quite a different types of software in my career, and stuff I really love, and great software, and I know how to use it pretty well. But if you ask me like how it really works, it's like, I don't, you know, I'm a landscaper when it comes down to it, not a software designer. Like, it works really well and I love it. Like, how it does it, I don't know. But so there's a lot of things I want to get into in our conversation today. I want to talk more about what you just said, not letting money get in the way of pursuing your dreams. I want to also talk about some of the cool things that you are involved with Melosi. One of those being how you're interacting with the college classroom, doing some unique design work with college students, and some other things. But I want to back up a little bit and just let you kind of share with the audience a little bit about your story. How did you get into landscaping? You know, you started when you were 15 years old. Just tell that like beginning story a little bit so we can get to know you.
Yeah. So as a young teenager, I was a Boy Scout and I wanted to go to summer camp. And to go to summer camp, I had to pay for it. And my brother-in-law and his dad had a tree care company in Arizona. And they offered me the ability to go out and work with their crews, hauling brush. And then, you know, progressively each summer I had more responsibilities. Before I turned 18, I was climbing trees. But, you know, I started from the very bottom, being the gopher and going and getting the things that were needed, or hauling branches from where they were being trimmed to the chipper. You know, as a 15-year-old, you can't run heavy machinery. And so I was just labor moving branches from one spot to another. I'm a curious person. And so, you know, we'd finish a job and I'd ask, well, why did we prune it this way? Or why do we do these things this way? Is there a better way to do it? And I just really became obsessed with kind of plant health, pruning techniques. I remember when I was 16 years old, I drove down to the local steel dealer and I bought an MS-193 with the money I'd saved up left over after scout camp so that I could go and prune the orange trees in our yard. And I butchered them, but I learned a lot. And from there, I served a 2-year church mission in Argentina. And after that, I came home and my brother-in-law offered me a full-time position. And so I started pruning trees. I pruned a lot of palm trees, a lot of sisu trees in Arizona, and began climbing full time until I went to college that later that year. But that's kind of how I got into the green industry. And I'll say, as an arborist, I was not a big fan of landscapers. Right tree, right place. As an arborist, you're dealing with the problems after they're already there. As an arborist, you have to avoid the landscape lights and you have to avoid the bushes that are planted under the trees. And a lot of it was I thought that landscapers were just making my life harder and my job harder. Today, I can look back as a landscaper and oh, those arborists dropping branches on my landscape lights. And there's a balance there between the two sides of long-term maintenance, especially of those mature trees, and the installation from the get-go and the design aspect of it.
That's awesome. It's fun to hear that story and what was kind of the initial drive that got you into working as a young teenager, but also, as you said, kind of ignited this interest in arboriculture and in landscaping. So paying for scout camp, paying for summer camp.
Paying for summer camp.
And you, I just love this too. You save your money, you buy your first chainsaw. Like, what else can I do? I've learned all this stuff. Like, I want my own chainsaw now. So do you still have the MS-193 or is it?
Oh, I sure do. I think it's MS-193 and it's its third version. One of them got ran over. One of them I blew the head on because I didn't do preventative maintenance, and but I still have an MS-193. So
It's the third version,
yeah, it's the third,
3.0.
3.0.
So these are all learning experiences, that, and you've called that out like three times so far in our conversation, like, yo, I messed this up, but it was a learning experience, and I commend you. I think sometimes it's hard for me to, or, and a lot of people, I don't think I'm the only one to say like, wow, I really messed that up. But hey, you still have a smile on your face. You're like, but I learned this, I blew a head. I blew the cylinder in my chainsaw, but I learned, maybe a little bit more, make sure I get the mix oil right or change the air filter once in a while will help make it last longer.
Don't
I'm
run
not
it
putting
too
words in your
lean.
mouth, but
Oh yeah, yep, it's both of those things.
I'm only saying what I have done when I've blown engines in small equipment. That
Yeah.
might not apply to you, but it's applied to me.
Don't put straight gas in a mixed fuel, a small engine, right?
That's a good one.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, if you're not learning from your mistakes, you're not progressing. And if you're not making mistakes, you're not growing. And you either have to pay for experience with money by going to college or going to classes, or sometimes you pay for experience with mistakes and things you've messed up that you have to make right. And I think that hands-on experience is worth just as much as the classroom time I've spent.
Great. So, Keenan, how do you think we as professionals could be more comfortable with making mistakes and realize, because we make them anyway.
Right.
But I think sometimes we are so afraid of making mistakes that we don't take the necessary risks. That would help us to grow and learn, and we're too afraid to like get out of the comfort zone. I know I've felt that way. Do you have any thoughts on like how we could make, messing up or failing quickly, as some people will say, part of our culture?
Yeah, so I think that it starts with trying something new and never being satisfied that this is the way we've always done it, therefore it's the best way. And it's keeping your eyes out for better ways to improve what you're doing. And it doesn't matter if you're running a weed eater, or if you're spraying a lawn, or if you're mowing, or even if you're doing office work and estimating. You know, at the end of the day, nobody's perfect. We haven't reached perfection. And so just striving to get better each day. You know, my fifth great grandfather said that perfection is being better today than you were yesterday, and being better tomorrow than you are today. And I really take that to heart.
Yeah, I love that. That's a cool story. And yeah, I think that idea is something that a lot of us, I know for me, could work on, is like, hey, I'm, especially when we're trying to do something new or do something that hasn't been done before. Either we haven't done it before, or the organization that we're working for. I do a lot of in my work developing training material. I've started to get into a lot more like video creation and video editing. And there's some people out there that do it really, really well. And I find myself watching, you know, things like that people have made, whether it's a commercial or something, and starting to think about like, oh, how did they make this animation do this? How did they make this text appear? And so I'm getting into some software that does that. And like, I'm such a novice at it. Like, there's so many mistakes that I make, and just, I guess just getting in the mindset of like, it's okay. Right. And being in a safe place where the people I'm, you know, my boss is going to be okay. Like, Skyler's on a learning curve right now, and he's going to make some stuff. And in 6 months from now, the stuff he makes is going to be a lot better than it is now, but he's got to kind of get through that, weed through that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And then something that we say pretty frequently at Melosi is that we're not doing brain surgery. Nobody's life is on the line with what we're doing. And so if we mess up, you know, we can fix it. We can go back and make it better. And so why not try something new? And an example of this is last year at Melosi, we tried out using plant growth regulators on turf type tall fescue, right? To see if we could go longer between mows and save some labor. And hopefully that labor would pay for the chemical, you know, the labor that we saved would pay for the chemical, and we could reallocate that labor to do more important or other work. And so we tried it out on five different properties. One of them was our owner's mom's house, a couple of our nicer clients, you know, in an HOA. And, you know, we did our first application in June, and we did a full rate application. And we absolutely saw the growth reduction, right? We had something like an 18% average labor reduction in mow hours on those properties. But because of how high of that first application was and how late into the year and growing season it was, there was significant bronzing. And, you know, we'd mixed it with an iron product, but there was bronzing and people weren't happy with that. And it's like, well, we tried something new. We got a labor result, but the aesthetics suffered for 3 to 4 weeks. Now, after the aesthetics recovered, you know, I'd be willing to bet that it was the best lawn on the block. But you know, you have to kind of weigh your problems. You have to come up with solutions for them, and then you know, if it's something that's going to get better on its own, you know, monitor it. But we all make mistakes, and just keep growing.
So I want to talk about that specific situation a little bit more, because I think there's some other aspects that we could dive into, and that is when as landscapers we're going to try something new on somebody else's property that's a client of ours. And whether that be trying some growth regulators on a lawn, noticing the reduction, but the color not being as well, how did you navigate that with the client? Was that something that you talked to them about before? Like, hey, we are going to try something.
Yep.
Trust us, kind of thing. And then when the bronzing happened, you know, talk just about that, because I think that that's an important part of this failing and trying something new, is we're doing that on somebody else's property. We're doing that on a customer's property. It might not go well, and building. So anyway, talk about that a little bit.
So the properties we chose, I was at that time a client relationship manager for Melosi, as well as a couple of other things. And they were my clients. And so I had a really good relationship and rapport with those homeowners. And so we got approval beforehand. We let them know what we were doing, what we hoped our results were, and we told them, you know, you're not going to have to pay anything extra. This is what we're expecting and hoping to see. And one of the benefits is, you know, people don't necessarily want to see landscapers out at their house, you know, once a week, right? They enjoy their quiet time, their privacy. And that was a big sell for one of those clients in specific, was, you know, a reduction in time on property. And when it started bronzing, and we noticed it, we got ahead of the problem. We communicated what we saw, why we saw it. Then we asked them if they wanted to continue with the trial, because it was three applications, or if they wanted to stop. All of them wanted to continue. And the following applications, you know, we saw better results, and we didn't see the bronzing that we'd seen with that first one. I think a big part of it is being proactive in your communication. And when a problem comes up, you being the one bringing it to the customer's attention instead of them bringing it to you.
Great, great advice. Proactive, transparent communication.
Yeah.
When we, in my work, when we do our annual customer surveys, we call them our customer experience survey. We always survey our customers pretty much at the hardest time of the year, in the middle of, you know, summertime, late summer, when things are tough for us. And we want to get an accurate measure of what is our customer experience like during those times. And the feedback that we get, if I simplify it down to one thing, it's communication. So when our customers are really happy with us, they will tell us communication is great. And they almost always will refer to a specific individual. Keenan always answers the email. Keenan always returns my call. That communication is great. So that's the word. The opposite is true too. When things are not going good, or they're not super pleased with us, they tell us communication. Mm-hmm. I can't get an email back. It takes me forever for them to respond to a text, whatever. So sounds like you really hit a home run with this project on experimenting with something new for Melosi and for your clients and getting ahead of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that communication point, I've got another anecdote. A year and a half ago, we had a client reach out and was asking for a full redesign of his backyard. And I began at Melosi as a junior landscape designer. And so, you know, the project was passed down to me. I met with him. You know, we went back and forth on the design, finally nailed it out, got it scheduled. And the day of the project, like, things just started going wrong. And we were reactive in a lot of that communication instead of proactive. And he and I, you know, we wrapped up what we were doing. He and I sat down, and at the end of the day, he wasn't very happy with the communication or with the project. And so, you know, we made our hit list of the things we needed to, our punch list of the things we needed to fix. And, you know, we over communicated from that point on what we were going to do. Well, once we'd over communicated and we'd committed and we fixed all of the problems, he was left very happy. Well, then he calls me 3 months later. Hey, you know what? I think I want landscape lighting. Mm. And then he calls me and it's like, you know, I think I want to do phase two of the project, because we had phased it out with some, you know, trees and then some perennial shrubs and some, you know, woody ornamentals. And then from there, he actually ended up converting into a maintenance client where we're taking care of his yard. And he wrote me an email review after the second project, where we'd learned from our mistakes and we'd communicated what we were doing, when we were doing it, why we were doing it that way. And he said, you know, the communication was the most important part. And that's why he came back to Melosi for the following projects. The fact that we stood by our word and we fixed the problems he had.
Congratulations. Another lesson with this conversation we're having about learning and making mistakes and being okay with it is, with a client, we can see when we make mistakes or goof up with a client and they're not happy. That's not, I mean, nobody wants to do that, right? We all hope that doesn't happen. But you shared an example of sometimes when that happens, it actually opens up a door of opportunity for us to there's a writer that talks about this as the great last chapter. It opens up an opportunity to prove to them that what we can do, like we are going to fix it. And it opens up a bigger opportunity, if this makes sense, to gain trust. Yeah. It's kind of a weird thing, a weird dichotomy in that, like, well, we messed up, they shouldn't trust us, but then we earn a deeper level of trust and experience by like show them how we're going to fix the mistake. So I think that's a good thing to keep in mind, is that there's an opportunity there. I'm sure every one of the listeners on this podcast, if they've had any time in landscaping at all, has fouled it up, you know, in some way or another. So how we react to that with the customer, and you shared a great story of how you're able to really win a customer, not just for that project, but for future projects and then, you know, reoccurring revenue in a maintenance contract.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing at Melosi. So your job title is Plant Healthcare and Fine Gardening Manager. Just share with the audience, what is that mean? What is your work like day to day? What are your primary responsibilities with Melosi?
Yeah, so this is a recent promotion. I started this position, you know, 1st of January. And I went from a client relationship manager where the clients were my clients to, you know, an operations manager position where our employees are my clients. And as a plant healthcare and fine gardening operations manager, I get to manage all of our plant healthcare services. So that's our fertilization. It's our, you know, insecticide, fungicide treatments. It's all of the things our plant healthcare technicians do, as well as identifying plant healthcare concerns or things that are on the point of appearing where we're at. And then at Melosi, we offer fine gardening services to estate type properties. And so we have a specialized crew of horticulturist technicians that go out and do, you know, espalier pruning or specimen tree pruning. And then they do, you know, really the fine touch detail gardening on the properties to make sure the perennial beds look their best, and to make sure that, you know, these are properties where the people can walk outside every day and say, wow, I'm glad that I have this landscape, and I'm glad I've entrusted it to Melosi.
Sweet. So correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like, you know, you started in arboriculture, you went to college and majored in business, but minored in horticulture. And now kind of with your role, like plant health care, and whether we're talking about plant growth regulators or mm-hmm. pest, disease, fungus, bacteria, have you had a need to study more or brush up on your skills in plant health care, pest control, sustainable pest management? And if so, how have you done that?
Yeah, absolutely. You don't know what you don't know. When I moved to the South from Idaho. Before I lived in Idaho, I lived in Arizona. And each of those are completely different bioregions of the United mm-hmm. States. You know, you go from that cold, high desert in Idaho, you have the desert of Arizona. And now I'm in, you know, the South, Southeast, where there's more green and more water than I've ever seen in my entire life. And so, you know, it's not just the insects that are different here, but it's the plant material. It's the diseases. It's how you manage things, the timing of it. But yeah, so it's, you know, it's a different bioregion. There's different plant material, different needs where we're at. And something I've done is I rely really heavily on our vendors. You know, we use here at Melosi Site One Landscape Supply. We use Advanced Turf Solutions, and they have experts on staff who are willing to meet with me and discuss, you know, the chemicals, the management strategies. Last year, I sat down with a guy, I think he has a PhD in plant pathology that works for Rainbow Ecoscience. Mm-hmm. He reviewed our plant healthcare plan for ornamental tree and shrub, kind of walked me through what, you know, what's great, what's going to work well, you know, what could use improvement. And something that I really respected about him is he was nothing but respectful and professional in his suggestions. And he had a lot of compliments for what we were doing that another vendor had put together for us. And that helped build my trust in him. You know, a vendor could come in and say, "Oh, this is all terrible. You're not doing it right." And you know, "Oh, who do I trust at that point?" But when they're complimentary and there to help you get better, it can be relied on. And then with that, I attend a lot of industry classes. My first year at Melosi, they actually sponsored me to go through the Sumner County Master Gardener program to get more familiar with the gardening and the plants in our area. And so I'm a Tennessee Master Gardener as well.
Great. I if they're the for the younger members of our audience that are at the earlier stages of their career than maybe some others, I think that learning that you don't have to know everything is empowering and relieving at the same time. It was for me. Rely on other experts and vendors that can help you with, whether that be with irrigation, with IPM stuff, with product, with what plant growth regulator should you use on lawn versus on an abelia hedge or something. Rely on experts out there that can help you be better at your job, I think is a good one.
Yeah, and take really good notes when you talk to them, because you know, you can only ask your turf guy so many times, what's the treatment for brown patch again?
Before they get kind of annoyed.
Yep.
I answered that last month.
Yeah.
Great. All right, so I said that I wanted to get into something that Melosi has done with Brigham Young University, Idaho, that really came out of COVID times and the need for teaching landscape design to be engaging and interactive at a time when we could only teach that online. So most landscape design classes, college landscape design classes, are very hands-on. You're in a lab, you're getting lots of feedback from professors and TAs. They're over your shoulder, they're writing on the paper, they're, you know, it's trace paper and edits in AutoCAD and stuff like that. So there's this need that came out of COVID to say, how do we create a really good design learning when we can't actually even get together? And so Melosi helped us at BYU Idaho do something about that. And I'd like you to talk about, because now that you're at Melosi, that kind of was before you were at Melosi, but now that you're at Melosi, you're kind of involved in that work that Melosi has done with BYU Idaho, at least, in helping improve design courses and the ability for college students to interact directly with professional landscape designers.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't mind, I'd like to just share my experience with Melosi in that. So during COVID, I took Introduction to Landscape Architecture, and my professor was none other than Skylar Westergaard. In the class, our final project was to design a landscape that Melosi was at that time designing. And so Melosi came to the class. They had a Zoom call with us. They gave us the client needs. They showed us the property. They were on site, talked through some of the challenges. And the proper, like the design was for a memorial park that a veteran was sponsoring in his HOA. And, you know, we were given all of the design needs. We were given the base map and we were told to design it. Well, I'm not a great hand-drawn artist. I'm more than willing to admit that. I rely really heavily on the softwares we have. And I also rely on other people for good design ideas. You know, replication is really good. So the first thing I did was reach out to my LinkedIn network and ask them, you know, I'm working on a school project. It's designing a memorial park. What are some themes or elements that I could include that would, you know, stand out or would pay respect to our soldiers and troops? And I got really, really good feedback from my LinkedIn network. The post was shared. I had a few people DM me things. And so, you know, using the things that I had been told from LinkedIn, I began to sketch out my idea for the landscape, for a water feature, the memorial plaques and the flagpoles. And it was a really, my design was really hardscape heavy. I know that the planting plan was lacking. And I was really, really proud of myself. Like I hand drew it too. So I didn't use software for this one. And I thought I'd done like my very best on it. I stayed up all night on multiple nights to like make sure I would be done by the due date. And then Melosi, we submitted our projects, Melosi reviewed them, and then came to our class digitally and went through each of the designs and gave critiques. And at the very end of it, they chose a first, a second, and a third. I was like, oh, I really hope I, you know, get first, second, or third. I'm a little competitive. And nope, didn't even place. I was like, you know, that's a bummer. But, you know, I was very proud. It became a portfolio piece for me. And about a week later, Bill Petrie, who's one of my coworkers now, reached out to me over LinkedIn and was like, hey, buddy, could I get your phone number? I want to talk to you about something. And so he called me. And he said, Keenan, I want to let you know that your design was one of my favorites, but the reason why you didn't place is that one of our core values at Melosi is we do what we say. And one of the project requirements was screening along the back edge, and your design didn't have the necessary screening. And because of that, we couldn't give you a place. And one, that stuck out to me because a company that lives by a core value, like we do what we say, is the kind of place that I wanted to keep my eyes out for to work for. And also just the fact that he would reach out to me after the fact and give me that professional criticism and feedback, like I really appreciated. And that led me to talking to them at the NCLC job fair, which led to an invitation to fly out to Nashville with my wife and daughter, which led to a job offer as a junior landscape designer. I'd say that, you know, at Melosi, we still offer that to universities and colleges. If you're interested in the program, reach out to me. But we have base maps of projects that we've completed or that we're currently working on, and we can meet with you digitally on site, show your students what the project entails, and then give you the client needs list, the site assessment, and help your class, you know, do a real world project. And on some of them, if we get it done early enough in the semester, by the end of the semester, we can show you what we actually designed, presented, and even maybe completed for that client, and let the student see, you know, what kind of the real world looks like.
That's great. I learned some more about that story with your design that I didn't know about. This was a great opportunity. If you're listening and you're a landscape company and you want to find some ways to get involved with college students, I would recommend considering maybe doing something like Melosi's doing. What's great is that it's personable, it's real world, but you know, during COVID, it didn't cost us anything. I mean, there's some indirect cost, and you know, Melosi, Keenan's got to take some of his time to go digitally, visit digitally the college classroom. And the students, when they were working on this design, were able to go to the site digitally, right? We did a live site visit through Zoom and things like that. It can be a great way to get involved. Again, if you're a landscape company listening, you're like, wow, that could be a really fun, unique way for me to get involved with colleges or horticulture programs that I want to recruit from. And then as Keenan said, you know, if you're faculty listening or you're a student listening, maybe bring this up, you know, with your teacher and ask like, hey, could we do something like this? It sounds like Keenan, you said they could reach out to you at Melosi, yeah, if they were interested in teaming up with Melosi to do something like that and exploring that opportunity.
Yeah. And on that note, you know, one of our core purpose at Melosi is let's grow beautiful together. And like you said, you know, there are indirect costs to offering a program like this. There's indirect costs to offering an internship program like we do at Melosi. But our goal isn't just to make Melosi better, but it's to make the industry better. And it's to make sure that those who are coming up into the industry, graduating universities, technical colleges, or even high school programs that have horticulture focuses, have the opportunity to come to learn, to try it out in the real world, and to grow more beautiful.
I love it. So as we kind of get close to wrapping up our conversation, I want to ask, you know, Keenan, we've talked about some really cool things that you've done. You know, we've talked about not being afraid to make mistakes. We've talked about when you're going to try something new and be creative and you're going to do it on a customer's property, communicate really well. We've talked about when you make mistakes, use that as an opportunity to win more deeply a customer's respect and loyalty to your company. You shared this phrase, I wrote it down, don't let money get in the way of pursuing your dreams. So there's been a lot of stuff that we've talked about, but as we kind of get close to wrapping up, is there any advice or takeaway or thought that you would share with your, you know, people that are in your stage in their career, you know, the young professionals that are part of this network, that are also striving to have rewarding careers just like you and I are? Is there any wrap up thoughts you would share, advice or anything like that?
Yeah. I think for anyone else in my position, one, don't be afraid to have the conversation and ask your direct supervisor, like, how can I continue to grow? And what are the things that I need to do to keep progressing in my role with this company and as a person in general? And then also don't be afraid to take chances. And if you're not satisfied with a just because answer in the way your company is doing something or you're doing something, pull at that thread a little bit more and do something about it. We can let good become the enemy of better when we don't strive to continually improve.
Great advice, Keenan. Thank you. So every week before we close out, we like to just take a moment and share, each one of us share a rose and thorn, you know, and it's just a fun way to say, hey, this is what's going on in life right now. So this can be, you know, something that's rosy and that's going well and that you're happy about, whether that be in your career or your personal life, and or something that's been a little thorny or a little bit of a challenge that you've been trying to overcome. So Keenan, do you mind going first and sharing a rose and a thorn? And then I'll share mine for the week.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to share an anecdote first. So my aunt, her maiden name is Rose. And so anytime we would go and have dinner at her house, she'd do the rose and thorn exercise.
Oh, so okay. You're well rehearsed in this then.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that's rosy in my life, we're prepping to go to the National Collegiate Landscape Competition at BYU. I get to go and be one of Melosi's representatives there. And I'm really excited to kind of head back to home turf and see some people I haven't seen, see some family, got family there in Provo. And then for a thorn, you know, it's contract renewal season, and that can get a little thorny.
Yeah. Sweet. I love it. Thank you. And so it's fun to hear that you've done this rose and thorn exercise at Aunt Rose's quite a bit. For me, this week right now, I'll start with the thorn, I guess, and I'll end with a rosy thing. I can't remember if I shared this or not, but a few weeks ago I was out for a run and actually got, I'll say, attacked by a pit bull, something I never thought would happen to me. I thought those are just things you read about on the news. So luckily he only bit me, he or she only bit me once, but got me pretty good in the back of the hamstring. So the past few weeks I've had to deal with the local police department animal control and with this dog that bit me and finding out if it has rabies or not. So that's been a little bit thorny for me. Luckily I'm healing up pretty well. Bruising is going away and all that. The rose part of right now is I'm enjoying the nicer weather. It's been in the 80s, upper 70s, 80s the past few days here in Texas. So it hasn't been, we aren't in the unbearably hot, humid part of the year yet, but it just feels really nice. And I just realize how much better I feel when springtime starts to come around. And The rest of this week, I get to spend working in our San Diego office, which anytime I get to go to San Diego and be around palm trees all day is a good day for me. So the palm trees we try to plant here in Texas seem to die every few years from freezes. So we try to get away with it, but usually not too successfully.
Is it mostly phylliferas or Washingtonias?
Washingtonia, windmill palm.
Yeah.
So those that are kind of like on the edge a little bit. So awesome. Thanks for your time today, Keenan. It's been so great to talk to you. I say this every time on these podcasts, but I feel like we could spend another hour talking about all the cool things that are happening in our industry and in your career. I hope that you enjoyed spending some time talking with me and catching up as a past student of mine and now just another colleague in the profession. I'm also excited to be attending NCLC next month. We're ready to go here at Landcare. We're getting all prepped and excited for that event. Hope to see many of our listeners there too. And while you're there, come up and Keenan, did you say you're going to be there?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, out in Provo. So if you're listening and you're going to be at NCLC in a few weeks, take some time to come and find Keenan and I and say hi. Brett also, he's not here today, but come and introduce yourselves and say hi to us. Keenan, thank you again. Thanks everybody. Thanks to our listeners for listening this episode of Growing in the Green Industry. And of course, a big shout out and thank you to our sponsor, Steel. If you want to get your MS-193 and following Keenan's footsteps, again, you can find out more information at steelusa.com or go to your local steel supplier.
I think
don't forget. Go ahead.
Oh, I think they're up to the MS-194 now.
Yeah, the 194. Okay, yeah. So you have to get the newer one more CC in the engine or something. I don't know. Awesome. So don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review and have an awesome rest of your week, everybody. Take care.